Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The Labor Department this morning issued its report on employment and unemployment in September, and contrary to the forecasts of administration economists, the jobless rate went down. In July, it was 5.7%, in August, 6%, and the experts thought it would go up again last month. Instead, it fell to 5.8%. The Labor Department says that just about the entire decline in unemployment occurred among adult women, especially among married women. Another encouraging development on the economic scene, the Auto Workers Union has reached a tentative settlement with Ford. We'll hear about it from Rob Marr of CBS radio affiliate WWJ in Detroit.
The new tentative three-year contract worked out between Ford Motor Company and the United Auto Workers came just 32 minutes before a national strike deadline. The issue holding up the pact, apparently, overtime. The company wanted to return to compulsory overtime, according to Auto Worker President Douglas Frazier.
The overtime problem really was more of a problem created by the company's demands upon us rather than vice versa. And the company withdrew all of those demands. And so we maintain the status quo, and we consider that a victory.
The status quo allows workers to refuse weekend work after two consecutive weeks. The contract follows the General Motors pay-setting agreement worked out September 14th. That includes 26 paid days off over the 3 years, plus holidays, more money for pensioners, and an annual 3% wage hike. Ratification begins next Tuesday, but if militant skilled tradesmen who hold veto power over the contract reject the agreement and, says Frazier, give valid reasons, the union will call a strike at Ford while bargaining resumes. Rob Marr for CBS News, Detroit.
Workers at one Ford plant weren't informed of the tentative settlement by the midnight deadline, and they staged a brief walkout. After a busy afternoon in Des Moines, Iowa, Pope John Paul last evening arrived in Chicago, and Chris Kelly tells us about the reception he got there.
This city, where there are more Catholics than anywhere else in the country, gave Pope John Paul II a rousing welcome. The people surged into the streets as his motorcade went by. They showered him with flowers, streamers, and cheers. At one point in blessing the crowd late at night outside Holy Name Cathedral, the Pope said, "You must go to sleep." But the pontiff did not rest and went on to tell a group of religious brothers to challenge what he called the false security of mankind, possessions, knowledge, and power. This morning, the Pope is celebrating a mass in Polish in a Polish section of the city. He is also meeting with a conference of American Catholic bishops. And with the bishops and cardinals this afternoon, Pope John Paul II will come celebrate an open-air mass in Grant Park, where a million or more people are expected to attend. Chris Kelly, CBS News, Chicago.
This evening, the Pope attends a concert by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Sir Georg Scholte, and tomorrow morning he flies to Washington, the final stop on his American journey. The Senate Intelligence Committee today plans to release a report on U.S. capabilities in monitoring the SALT II Treaty, and Phil Jones has details.
It will be what the committee calls a sanitized report, meaning exclusion of highly classified material that might disclose some U.S. intelligence techniques to the Russians. Treaty proponents had hoped the Intelligence Committee would conclude that the U.S. has the means of adequately verifying the treaty, but informed sources say no conclusions have been reached, and the information will be left to each senator's interpretation of verification confidence. President Carter and all the administration officials familiar with U.S. intelligence capabilities maintain that the treaty is verifiable. However, several senators disagree. Senator John Glenn, respected for his technical knowledge from his days in the space program, claims that the intelligence community is working to develop the national technical means of verifying the treaty. However, it is Glenn's view that the treaty is not yet adequately verifiable. And Glenn has indicated that although he wants to vote for the treaty, unless the monitoring matter is resolved to his satisfaction, he is leaning against it. Phil Jones, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
This morning, Secretary of State Vance was asked about the Intelligence Committee report.
I will be testifying next week before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and also before the Armed Services Committee in closed session with respect to the question of verification. I am confident that we can adequately verify the SALT Treaty. Admiral Turner and I will be testifying together when the time comes. And I can say that I believe we will be able to convince both committees of the Congress to which I have referred that we do indeed have the means to adequately verify the treaty.
Vance was interviewed on the CBS News broadcast Friday morning. Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin is under intense political pressure today to support expansion of 7 Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank region. Dan Raviv has details.
The cabinet is to consider the issue in just over a week, and generally in these matters, Begin's opinion prevails. The Prime Minister met today with some leading members of the National Religious Party, who are threatening to leave his coalition unless the government seizes land owned by Arabs to provide more room for these 7 settlements. Without the religious party, Begin's government would fall. Ultranationalist Jews seized land surrounding 2 of their settlements in the West Bank yesterday until Israeli troops evicted them peacefully. The ultranationalists say it will be too late to move more Jews in once Palestinian autonomy is set up. But moderate members of Begin's cabinet are warning that it is precisely because of the autonomy talks that private Arab land should not be seized, because the United States and Egypt might accuse Israel of sabotaging the negotiations. But in light of domestic politics, Prime Minister Begin and his cabinet are expected to approve the expansion of the settlements. Dan Raviv for CBS News, Tel Aviv.
Rosalind Carter is back in Washington this morning from her third political trip to Florida, where Bruce Hall reports that the Carter-Mondale forces are preparing for their first head-to-head clash with backers of Senator Edward Kennedy.
In what is being billed as the president's first major test of strength, Democratic County caucuses will be held throughout Florida in less than 2 weeks on October 13th. Kennedy and Carter supporters will apparently be facing each other in 63 of Florida's 67 counties. And there are reports the Kennedy forces are picking up strength, but the Carter supporters are confidently predicting they will win 65% of the delegate seats. But Mrs. Carter and other top Carter officials are taking few chances. They are crisscrossing the state, stressing the importance of the October 13th selection, and urging their supporters to turn out in large numbers. They are concerned because the 878 delegates selected will cast ballots in a public but non-binding straw vote at the state convention November 18th. And both Kennedy and Carter backers are pulling out all stops in order to make certain they are not embarrassed by the outcome of that straw ballot. Bruce Hall, CBS News, Tampa.
The Florida State Chairman, Alfredo Duran, says all concerned are making too much of the October 13th caucuses. Duran says it started with the press, but now he says everybody's getting into it. Family reunions after long absences are always emotional affairs, but there's a special poignancy to the reunion reported from Los Angeles now by David Dow.
When Vietnam fell to the communists more than 4 years ago, Lynn Arden happened to be away from her native Saigon, outside the country. She could not return. Her then 6-year-old daughter, Hai, was in Saigon and could not leave. Since then, Mrs. Arden and her American husband have settled in Los Angeles. She has spent many tearful nights worrying about Hai. Then, early this year, came word from a friend that Hai had been seen in an Indonesian refugee camp for boat people. Mrs. Arden began a frantic effort to bring Hai to the U.S.
I called Washington. I write to almost 50 letters I have. And only reply the same answer. We're sorry, we cannot do anything.
6 weeks ago, Mrs. Arden stopped waiting and, against the advice of almost everyone, flew to Asia to personally look for Hai. She searched crowded refugee camps on 3 islands, and finally, success. There were her daughter, now 10, and a nephew, 11, ragged, ill, but alive. Mrs. Arden got them out of that camp, and today they are spending their first full day in the U.S. together. David Dow, CBS News, Los Angeles.
A UNICEF spokesman in Bangkok says a plane carrying about 40 tons of food and medicine for sick and starving Cambodians flew to Phnom Penh today. For the third day in a row, gold prices are dropping in Western Europe. The morning fix in London, $367.50 an ounce, $2 lower than that in Zurich. The decline is apparently caused in large part by rumors that the U.S. is about to announce a new economic package to support the dollar. The dollar rose today in Tokyo. It's lower on the European markets.